Good Tuesday afternoon, and welcome into Grant and Danny. It is July 30th, 2024, and you are listening to 106.7 The Fan. We will take you all the way up to 6:30 tonight and late night Nationals baseball on this, the day of the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Comes your way in 4 hours. We'll be live right at 6 to find out whether or not the Nationals pulled off any more deals. We're expecting a Dylan Floro trade today at least. I think maybe they'll trade Kyle Finnegan, although supposedly they're asking for the moon. And there's a lot of football to discuss today on Grant and Danny. Steve Weish, NFL Network, was at Commanders Camp this weekend. He joins us at 5. Robert Mays of The Athletic will stop by at 6. He has also recently been at Commanders training camp. And speaking of the trade deadline, Lane Thomas on the move yesterday, which we'll get to in a few minutes. The Nats got a nice haul of prospects back in a 3-for-1 deal. Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline. Nobody I like talking prospects with more than Callis. He will be with us today at 3:30 in 90 minutes to discuss the return for Lane Thomas right here on Grant and Danny. But ladies and gentlemen, say hello to Danny Ruye.
What up, dude? Busy little bees today. I love days like this. I love trade deadline days. Because there's anticipation, there's also regular sports news, but you got to stop and have your head on a swivel, as I said, to kind of be able to pivot, if that is necessary, to talk about a deal or Howie Mandel-style no deal. I'm all about it. So timing, listen, Major League clubs are smart. They know that 5 runs last night from Kyle Finnegan doesn't mean he's not worth trading for. They know about all the peripherals and some of the numbers equalizing last night and regression that he was probably due for. Still, a valuable late-inning reliever. His value may have taken a little bit of a hit last night just to show you what's possible sometimes if it gets really bad. But I'd imagine a contending team that was interested before is probably still interested. It's going to be interesting what the Nationals do. I've seen a couple different tweets. People who talk about this are saying that their asking price is astronomical for him, telling you they're not that motivated to move him, or they're just trying to get as much as they can. I love these sorts of bits of negotiation.
I'd be surprised if they trade him because they already traded Hunter Harvey, and I think they're going to trade Dylan Floro. And to give up your 3 best relievers when Finnegan's under contract for next season means you've got to then rebuild your entire bullpen this offseason, which costs a lot of money. And is that something the Learners want to spend on, or do they want to spend at all is always a good question. But do they want to then have to fix the bullpen, add that to the to-do list? I'm not so sure. But it's a seller's market, as we saw with the Lane Thomas deal and some of the other packages that have come back for veterans around baseball. It's hard to hang on to Kyle Finnegan if you're able to get a really good prospect or 2 really talented players in the upper minors who are close to the major league. So big, big decision for Mike Rizzo today. More on that in just a couple of moments. But yeah, there's no doubt. If you were one of the few, the proud, the elite, who stayed up last night to watch your Nats until 1 in the morning local at about 12:40 a.m. in D.C. when Kyle Finnegan just got rocked for 5 hits and 5 runs. And there's times where, you know, a reliever has a really bad inning and the numbers look bad, but it was a jam shot, or you know, maybe they just got unlucky and a ball fell in, or a four hopper got through the infield. He gave up some rockets.
Yeah.
I mean, he was not fooling anybody last night. But did you know, Danny Ruye, as we sit here on July 30th, 1 day left this month, we are 2 days away from preseason football. Thursday night.
That's right.
The Hall of Fame game, which is one of the great pretend tease events in all of sports, because it's the first time you get to see a network televise an NFL game in months, and you go through all the motions all day long and then watch the game as if it's real, but it's mostly guys you haven't heard of, or if you're a huge college fan, that you know a little bit from their time a level ago, and most of the starters won't play, and if they do, they'll play a couple of snaps, but it still feels so good to know. We got a football game, not a real one, but as close as we're going to get for a little while, Thursday, this week, 2 days away.
Yeah, I'll tune in and then remember that it's not a particularly quality football game, but I'm not going to look the gift horse in the mouth and say no thank you. That is one of those things where it's a nice dress rehearsal. It's more seminal. It's more like ceremonial than it is an important football game, right? I mean, I've already seen that the Bears starters aren't going to play. No first look at Caleb Williams and company. So we have to put that off for another week plus.
They made that announcement today. Yeah. Still waiting on a similar announcement from the Texans, but I have a real hard time believing that if the Bears aren't playing their rookie, Caleb Williams, that the Texans would play their sophomore, who was the rookie of the year last year, C.J. Stroud. We might get a lot of backups right away.
Sure. Again, it won't be much implication other than it's here. Other than from now on, it's football time. So for those of you that don't like it, sorry about it. It's 2 days.
That means next week, Washington is playing a preseason game. That means the rest of the NFL is getting ready to get on the field. So more than anything, it's just a mile marker. And to hear one of your favorite broadcast themes played and some familiar voices calling an NFL game, it just gets you back into the flow, and it lets you know everything's going to be okay. It's like the pillow at your house that you crave getting back to, right, when you're on a vacation or something. We're back.
There for you.
Johnny Newton spoke to the media today, the rookie defensive tackle for the Commanders. This was actually really interesting. I had not heard this. And maybe he broke his own news on this because I didn't see this anywhere. So you know that he had the foot operation earlier this offseason on a foot that the Commanders and every other team knew needed to be operated on. He played through the pain this season. He played through an injury. So he had the right foot surgically repaired. Well, apparently when they were trying to figure out exactly what needed to be done on the surgery on the foot, they took an X-ray of both feet. And the reason that he needed the operation on the second foot, and he had basically the exact same injury in the other foot, he didn't find that out because he hurt it running or playing or because he was in pain or discomfort. He actually told reporters today, I never actually felt anything, even discomfort, in my second foot. It was never a problem. It's just that when they took images of both feet to try to do a compare and contrast of the hurt one, they found out that the other one also had a similar problem and needed to be surgically repaired. Makes me feel actually a lot better about the whole situation.
Me too.
Not only because of how quickly he recovered. He's already on the practice field. He took part in 11s today. He was doing indo drills the last few days. Like, he is elevating every single day what they're asking him to do, what he's able to do. But it's not like that was an injury he suffered where he was in a walking boot and then had to go get surgery. He's at the doctor's office, and they're doing some imaging, and they go, hey, man, you know you're hurt? And he said, no, not at all. And they said, we could just knock this out for you. While we do one, we'll do them both.
Yeah, we're already going to get in one. We could just reverse it and do it in the other one.
And maybe, I'm sure for the recovery, there's a reason that they did one first and then the other.
Sure.
But the point is, everything that has come back on Newton, from how quickly he healed to the actual story behind this injury, I think it makes you feel a lot better than where we were worried that this could be a Doxson or a Samuel situation that just lingers forever. It seems like he's blowing past that.
100%. And it is a relief. Because I was basically, as soon as you hear, yeah, he had a foot problem that everyone knew about, it's why he slipped in the draft, but we just discovered another foot problem, and he's only got 2 feet. And a guy of that size and that build, there's a lot of pressure that's going somewhere, right? For some guys, it's knees, it's back, it's hips, and for him, it looked like it was his feet, and that was going to be an issue. It sounded like one of those overly optimistic prognoses where, yeah, he'll be back. He's going to be day-to-day for a while. Then he'll be day-to-day in December still, and he won't have played, and you're going, oh, my God, we're doing this again. That's not the case. It's the opposite of that. He has breezed past every milestone, to your point, and it sounded like they had to hold him back just to make sure, just to take kind of precaution, which is very, very different than we're used to seeing right here. It's welcome.
So I want to revisit some of the discussions you and I had to set some expectations for him. You know, I'm buying big-time stock in the player. Wasn't overly familiar with him until after, really.
Went on the radar for Washington, right?
I just didn't think they were going to take defensive tackle, so I didn't study the position that well. I knew him from watching a little college football, but I didn't give it much more thought than that. And then after they took him, you go back and you watch, and you just fall in love. I mean, he is such a high motor, effort, athletic freak, just a real impact performer who had, over the last 2 years, 22 tackles for loss and 16 sacks or so in college. But I'm buying big-time stock. I just believe he's going to be a pocket-pushing, a defender who can create some havoc. You know, we talk all the time about how quarterback's the most important position in football, and nobody would dispute that. But if that's true, it is also true then that right there below that should probably be the interior offensive line protecting closest to that quarterback and the interior defensive line affecting that quarterback. And I think he's going to be that kind of guy. But now that he is, air quotes here, healthy and he's got the clean bill of health and it sounds like he's on a trajectory to get some legitimate camp work in the next week or two, do you reassess how much you think he could help this team this year? Because I know you've kind of thought it's a little more of a redshirt year for him.
Yeah, but certainly my eyeline frame or ceiling frame has gone up tremendously. Now, I still think there's a limit. There are two guys that should play a lot of snaps. He'll give them a break, and they can get more time off in Payne and Allen. They were playing 80, 90% of snaps a lot of weeks. That's just unsustainable.
But
it's not the smartest thing to do.
70%, let's say, to be fresher. Well, that now creates 60%
exactly.
For him.
Yeah, so that's 45, 50, even north of that. And you start factoring in different packages where you can play that kind of, you know, five down lineman, that bare front where he could be moving around. That's more exciting and more enticing to me. So this has kind of gone for me from a luxury pick where I didn't think they had any luxuries. I mean, this to me was buying a Cadillac when you're missing a roof. That's kind of changed now a little bit. If he's able to go from the get-go and be impactful and, you know, sort of, now you've kind of layered talent behind John Allen if you'd like him to move on and save some money next year for what? That's TBD. But it's a little bit more exciting for me than a guy that was going to have a nagging injury risk that everyone else knew should fall, and you were the one that was so smart. We got something that no one else does. Well, Gamble might work out for you if he's able to play.
And I'm a big fan of when you're on the clock at 36 and you see a player that shouldn't be there and you know next year, I can't get a guy like this unless I drafted in the first round. You've already got your vision, mm-hmm. and their vision board might show that John Allen's not going to be here next year. He's got no guaranteed money. Or maybe you do rework his contract and keep him around, and you've traded Daron Payne. But one way or the other, mm-hmm. this guy's going to be elevated, playing a massive role, and you're still going to have potentially four more seasons of him, you know, or I guess because he's a second-round pick, three more seasons for him on his rookie contract before you have to even consider giving him any kind of a raise. So had no problem with that pick. Josh Harris was at practice. The entire ownership group, it sounds like, made it out today. I liked that they still got a very nice welcome. I heard B. Mitch and Finley earlier today, who have done a great job covering training camp on site for us here at 106.7 The Fan. And those guys were asking, JP brought it up, he said, when do you think the hero's welcome will subside and it's not going to be like a novelty of everyone cheering and chanting thank you as Josh Harris walks out? And I got to thinking about that driving in, Danny. I think it's going to be a while.
Yep.
It, as long as they're not bad or there's no off-the-field drama, turmoil, controversy that comes from the ownership group, even if you're just normal and competitive and not that good, that is such an upgrade for people.
Yes.
Many of them at training camp today haven't been at camp in years because they refused to do anything that supported Dan Snyder. So just the idea that I'm allowed to watch games without feeling bad about it, that I'm allowed to go to the stadium if I haven't done that in years, that I can go to a practice and buy my kid a hat or a t-shirt mm-hmm. when I swore that off. I got my thing back because of these people buying the team from Dan Snyder. So I think that's not going to go away anytime soon. They obviously have to win to be beloved. I'm sure Josh Harris at one point with the 76ers when he took over, everyone was very excited, and they don't have a title yet. I think they've done a good job. I think the process worked. We could debate that. I happen to think going from a terrible team to a team that has a chance winning 50 games every year is a pretty nice job well done in the front office. Having said that, if years from now they're not getting deep into the playoffs, I'm quite sure people will have a different feeling or just a different reverence or lust, love for this group.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's more about Dan being gone still than them being here. So not surprised at all that they're still getting the big ovation.
Yeah, and I don't know when the honeymoon ends. We asked this rhetorically a couple different times and even, you know, opened up to calls at various points over the last year plus. I know that I'm not there yet, by the way. I'm going through a football season where there's no Dan Snyder was delightful. I can't wait for the next one. And I don't think they're going to be particularly good this year. They have a quarterback that I'm excited about, and long term, that's the most interesting thing. But I don't know when that's going to rub off. I don't know when the novelty is, okay, now let's actually start trying to build something, because they've done everything that I have ever asked for the most part. Right, there's still some things that I think they're missing the boat on, and I disagree with them, and would tell them so if they asked. They shouldn't ask, by the way. But hiring a general manager and having empowering that general manager to go build his staff, but have the buck stop with him. Understand that you need to reach out to fans and engage them in so many different ways. They've been outstanding in the community. They have the football structure that I want. Even if I would have gone, hey, I might not have hired that head coach. I might not have gone about, you know, changing the name this way or dropping these little hints about the stadium or whatever. Those are regular football conversations. And I will not take for granted that that's what we get instead of, okay, so the Eastern District of Virginia has an investigation, but so does the state of Virginia, and the federal court in D.C. does too. But that doesn't count the harassment charge in the lawsuit.
But are based you talking about the harassment case, or are you talking about
the first harassment
investigation
case.
Into the money that they scammed from the season ticket holders?
The third harassment case, because there are so many. We're not doing that anymore. Yeah. We're just doing a football thing. And it's so refreshing and so nice.
The way I describe it to people who don't know, because you guys listening to 106.7 The Fan are the real ones. You guys get it. I don't have to explain it to you. But when I talk to people at like a family party or I'm somewhere with my wife and her friends are around, I always say, a few years ago when you tell someone you're a Commanders fan, there's this big reaction and then you have to explain why and how it happened. And I happen to be born in this geographical area.
You see.
My mom sat me on her lap. And that slowly but surely is going to be less the case. With Dan Snyder gone and the investigations dissipating and going away, you don't have to explain yourself anymore, which is just a good feeling. Mike Rizzo doesn't have to explain himself, I don't think, after yesterday's Lane Thomas trade, because it was a really good return for the Nationals. Although I will tell you that there are fans that are upset that they're trading veterans. I think those are the same fans probably that hated the Juan Soto deal or were mad that they traded Jamer Candelario for a two-player package that included DJ Hurz, who's become a fixture in the rotation. But the rebuild continues, and Lane Thomas was the latest player to get dealt last night to the Cleveland Guardians. He's in the lineup for Cleveland this afternoon, batting second and playing right field, where he was a mainstay here in D.C. In fact, he was the organizational player of the year, two straight years, the MVP at the major league level, as voted by the media the last two seasons, which is a fairly dubious honor, I would say, here in Washington offensively. But he did do some really good things. They acquired him for a starter who was on his way out of the big leagues and having to retire soon thereafter, John Lester, with an ERA over 5 at the deadline 2 years ago. And Thomas would go on to play a couple of very productive seasons. And then this year with the Nationals, for trading him, the Nats get a three-player package, a 19-year-old single-A lefty named Alex Clemmie, who was the 58th pick in the draft last year. Huge strikeout numbers and a huge kid, 6'6". He was the number 8 prospect in the Guardian system to begin this year, and he's better than that in the rankings now. Fastball's big time. Tops out at 99. Was talking to someone who's seen him a bunch last night. They love how limmy he is and whippy the arm is. Throws a lot of balls, though. Needs to throw the ball over the plate. So it's high risk, high reward.
Sure.
But it's a teenager. He's the centerpiece of the deal. Another 19-year-old single-A player, a shortstop named Rafael Ramirez, who's a second-generation pro. His dad played in the big leagues. Left-handed hitting infielder. And then a 23-year-old who you'll see soon, probably at the major league level, was on the 40-man roster already. Triple-A infielder Jose Tena, who hit about 300 with 17 homers and 14 steals. At AAA with an 850 OPS this year, has played some shortstop and some third base. Less a prospect, but a guy who's closer. He's got 35 big league at bats already.
That's a pretty good third baseman there in Cleveland that's in his way. So it might be
Jose Ramirez might be okay. So it was three players. It's Clemmie, it's Ramirez, and then it's Tena in this deal. And the Nationals move Lane Thomas. So they've now traded Hunter Harvey, Jesse Winker, Lane Thomas. And with the deadline set for our show at 6 p.m. today, we'll keep you abreast of everything going on. Floro probably moved, and then as we said at the start, the big question is Finnegan, who gave up 5 hits and 5 runs last night, blowing a save in Arizona.
So I don't really mean this. I'm kind of winking tongue-in-cheek here a little bit, but I'm kind of serious. I would love to make a rule that if you're upset about trades like this, you don't get to cheer for the players you get in return. Like, if you were annoyed about the Juan Soto trade, keep your hands separated when James Wood comes to bat and sit down in your seat. When you're annoyed at Dylan Floro's hall or Lane Thomas's hall, when Tanya cracks a double into the gap, you got to sit there in silence and you have to look down at your phone or your shoelaces or something like that. This is how it's done. There is short-term pain for a team that's already experiencing pain. You keep Lane Thomas, you're going to finish just above the Marlins. You move on from Lane Thomas, you got a chance to be great. This is just easy math for me, but I understand. Listen, I get it. If you're paying season ticket prices, they're not discounting it because there's one less quality big leaguer in the show. So I understand to that degree, but this is why we're here. This is the whole point. We are going through the ramping up of the roller coaster, right? We're doing the trying to get up to that top again. We were there a handful of years ago. This is how you do it.
So I came to the realization, and it doesn't mean that I am always successful in navigating this. But there was a time where every time someone would yell or say, oh, this is ridiculous, or how dare them, or the rebuild's going on forever, and I would be interacting, and most of this is on social media, Twitter, what have you. And you're kind of just, it feels like you're explaining something till you're blue in the face. It's almost like debating politics or something. Like, there is no value in it. So to me, there's just two camps, right? There is a camp that understands how you rebuild in baseball. It's how the Nationals built the first time to win the World Series that all of those other people loved so much. And it's what the Cubs and the Astros and the Orioles currently and so many other teams have done to become championship caliber. And that is very efficiently, by the way, and at a really nice pace so far, what the Nationals are doing. I mean, the proof has been at the minor leagues and now with some of the young major leaguers. It's right there for you to see if you want to. But I'm just not spending any more time online. I don't have a problem on the show debating it, discussing it, taking calls. But I will not be arguing with people about how dare they trade their best player. What are they thinking? They were bad offensively and they're worse tonight in Arizona.
Yep.
You're just not understanding. It's the equivalent of, you know, someone arguing about, like, we're on a 10-hour road trip and they're upset that you just changed lanes on the third mile or something. I can't do it.
I don't have time, man.
So I could drag them kicking and screaming, but again, we did that when they traded Soto and everybody was angry, and I would say at this point, thank God they did. They're in a way better spot because of it, and there have been countless other examples of it. And if you want to knock the Nationals for their draft picks over the years, there's plenty of ammunition. If you want to knock the Nationals for their player development over the last decade, there's a whole lot you can pick from. What you cannot argue is that they don't do an excellent job generally with their trades. Do they bat 1,000?
Nobody does.
No, but they bat closer than anybody else. And by and large, under Mike Rizzo, they have done a better job than almost everybody in the returns for their trades of veteran players.
They go to the junkyard and find like a rusty paperclip and go to the flea market and walk away with quality major leaguers. I mean, there's an Office episode where there's a big garage sale. And Dwight's whole plan is to take a paperclip and turn it into something incredible.
Yeah.
He does that. That's what happened. That's what John Lester led us to this. John Lester, who at the end of his great player.
Nasty work by Rizzo.
World Series
Lester
champion.
Lester for Lane for three prospects and the Guardians top 20 in a pretty good system.
And you got multiple years of Lane Thomas as an instant profit. Then you get later on down the line profits. You didn't have to turn him back in. You didn't have to say, well, that's the end of our profit. You got 3 years of an everyday player, basically, who's then been spun into potential future big leaguers. Sorry about it. Please allow the gentleman to work.
Yeah, they've done a very good job for the most part with these trades. And the thing I really like is the people that I'm plugged in on who follow prospects and player development for a living, and even the scouts and stuff that I was texting and talking to last night that I know from my other gig where I do a show about minor leaguers on MLB Network Radio. Everybody thinks the return was really good. Now, it doesn't guarantee that any of these guys are going to work. Clemmy is super high upside, but a pretty risky proposition. You know, it's an effort to his delivery, and he throws a lot of balls. But they got more than most people in baseball thought they would for Lane Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're looking for. That's what you're hoping for. I will talk to Jim Callis in detail about the three players they got back from MLB Pipeline coming up at 3:30. So if you're interested, make sure you're listening then. Next, though, our A topic at a training camp on the Commanders is about Jahan Dotson, who spoke to the media today. What kind of year is Dotson going to have? That's next on Grant and Danny.
I mean, with him, anything is possible, and he's showing you that. He's putting me and Terry were just talking about it on the sideline. You know, he's putting the ball in places where it makes our job so much more easier, because he's putting it where only you can get it, and the defender has no play on it. So, you know, you truly gotta cherish stuff like that and be thankful for it, because not everyone can do that. He's a special talent. And he's showing you guys, he's showing us each and every day, and we're just excited that he's on our side.
The voice of Jahan Dotson out at training camp today as he met with the media at the podium. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. All of our training camp coverage on 106.7 is presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Dotson had very nice things to say about Jaden Daniels. You just heard some of those. He also broke down Cliff Kingsbury's offense and how it pertains to, you know, his role now moving forward. This was Dotson today at the mic.
The biggest thing for me is just getting our playmakers in space and letting us do what we do. Well, that's quick screens, stretching the ball down the field. You know, for me, myself, getting me in space, letting me create, create space, because I feel like I do a very good job of that in tight windows, letting me move around everywhere. Terry, you know, getting those deep balls, go balls. I feel like he's the best go ball player in freaking NFL history. So, you know, letting him do that, because it's truly an art what he does, and it's special watching it and being able to being that Cliff is enabling us to do that. It's really cool.
Dotson is a big time X factor for the Commanders this year. I don't think that's breaking any news. He was a first round pick now 2 years ago. As a rookie, he flashed a ton in the second half of the season after getting healthy. He regressed and really struggled last year despite more targets and more catches than in his rookie season. He played in 17 games and started 16, and he was sub 50 grabs and sub 520 yards, which I think pretty shocking when you think about some of the storylines coming out of camp and just how prevalent he was in the offense with Bieniemy calling the shots in August a year ago. But Danny, if Jahan Dotson can make good on being a first-round pick and play to the level that we were all expecting at one point in time, well, now you've got not only an added special weapon for Jaden Daniels, but you've got a receiving room with him and Terry McLaurin and a top 100 pick and some veterans you brought in, Alamide Zaccheaus and Jamison Crowder, where there's probably plenty there for Daniels. So he's a linchpin to this entire outfit's offensive design this year.
100%. And this, again, is the second of the two major gambles by this front office, staff, whoever you want to give the blame or credit to, depending on how it goes. I thought they needed to do something to be better in that department, both at left tackle and at wide receiver, mostly because of Dotson. I didn't trust him to be a bona fide second option for especially a neophyte quarterback, let alone for anybody. But you can get away with it if you've got Josh Allen or Joe Burrow or Pat Mahomes or somebody that's elite. If you've got a neophyte, they should have done way more at that position, in my opinion. I've gone over that. We've hammered that ad nauseum. But if they're right and they said, no, we got the solution internally. We got this guy that was miscast last year. We got this guy that, you know, this was a Howell Bieniemy problem, not as much a Dotson problem. You watch the production. If they're right, this is a different eye-line for the season. I think it's a much more functional offense. It's better for Daniels' development. Everything about it is enormous in terms of the growth of this kind of program here in year number one. It's a risk I wouldn't have taken, but they're doing it at two major key, super important, highly paid spots right behind quarterback in the NFL. This is where the money's going. Tackles, wide receivers, and people to tackle the quarterback. They didn't invest there much beyond a glorified fourth-round pick. And a third-round pick that was a part-time guard in college. If those things work out, these guys are geniuses, and I will go without questioning them for some time.
He played both slot and wide last year. They moved him around a ton. I don't know if that was part of the regression or coincidental, but he played 358 snaps in the slot last year and 551 out wide. He also lined up in the backfield on one play, for what it's worth. They just need a lot more out of him.
Yep.
He's the 16th pick in the draft. You don't draft a wide receiver at 16 unless you think that that player can eventually play like a number one in terms of productivity. Now, having watched him, he's not big enough necessarily. He doesn't really have number one type frame or skill set in terms of being a volume in a 100 catch, 1,500 yard wide receiver. That's not in the cards. But what I saw in his rookie year, what I hope he gets back to, was he fights for the football. He attacks the rock. He can make contested catches for a little guy, sub 6 foot, about 185 pounds, whatever he's going to be listed at the start of this season. He also, in addition to winning some jump balls downfield from Heinicke, think about that night game. I think it was against the Giants when he went up the ladder on like just a prayer of a throw into the air. He also makes plays after the catch. He is shifty and elusive and really capable in the open field. We saw him put defenders in, you know, the spin zone where he kind of would make a move or score after breaking the ankles of one or two defenders. Like, he had some real highlight plays. But last year was just different. He went from, in PFF grades, being 40th out of 113 qualified wide receivers in 2022 to 98th out of 128 qualified wide receivers in 2023. His overall grade via PFF, 71, which is in the green, that's good, to 57.7, which is in the yellow, not good, and trending toward actually just a bad season. There were some drops in there, which I know frustrated people. Those you got to put on him. But I do think his season had a lot more to do with the Bieniemy and Howell probably than it had to do with him. And if he plays poorly again this year, I'll update my file. Mm-hmm. But that is how I've decided to file that season away based on what I saw in his rookie year. If that was his rookie year, I'd feel differently about him. But we saw the first thing. You know, we saw what it looked like the previous season when you had a longtime coordinator with some play calling chops in this league making you a fixture. And down the stretch last year, he was the opposite of that. They didn't find him. They didn't prioritize him. They didn't care about him. How much of that was him? I guess we're going to find out real soon.
Yeah, this is a fascinating case study, right? I mean, if you change external factors and keep one constant the same, a.k.a. Jahan Dotson on his rookie deal, and we're going to really see. The proof will be in the pudding here. I think there's probably a lot of things that limited him last year, right, in terms of Howell, in terms of Bieniemy. No problem ascribing some blame there, right? Terry McLaurin barely cracked 1,000 yards, for example. We've got some deposits in the bank that say he's probably better than a guy that gets 1,002 yards on the nose, right? So there's some watering down, but there's a lot more on Dotson, I think, in terms of his lack of production overall. And if those things can be corrected or improved upon, again, this is a major gamble, and if it works, then they're geniuses.
I want to establish how we feel about Dotson with some numbers next, and we can open up the phones on this. So he is coming off of, just to set the table here, 49 catches and 518 yards, both basically career highs. He went for 523 as a rookie, but 49 for 518. If we set the over-under for Dotson this year at 59.5 catches, and 699.5 yards, so like 60 and 700. Would you go over or under for the wide receiver two in this Washington offense, Dotson, this season? 800-636-1067, MGM National Harbor Listener Lines. 800-636-1067 is the number you want to hop in on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
You know, the first thing I think of with him is, like, really good ball skills. So, like, backhand, behind, you know, like, if it's in the catching radius, it's a pretty good shot that he's going to come away with it. I thought he's also a good route runner. So, to set somebody up, to work a leverage and work back. So, he's pretty savvy in that way. And so, being around Bobby and having an understanding of, you know, what it takes to play it, I've been pleased. And so, when we get the ball in his hands, we're going to try to make plays and finish. And that's been one of the emphasis for a lot of the players after the catch, you know, what takes place. And I'm hopeful that you see that at practice where guys are down the field finishing with them to say, hey, can we extend plays? And so that's one of the big emphases for him as well.
Head coach Dan Quinn at training camp today. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Jahan Dotson spoke, has us thinking about the third-year wide receiver from Penn State. You're going over or under 59.5 grabs and 699.5 yards for Dotson. I was big wrong, loud wrong on Dotson last year. Thought he could lead the team in catches, catch 70-plus balls, go for 1,000. So I'm reassessing. I no longer view him as a guy with the ceiling to be better than McLaurin, which is kind of what I was thinking at one point late in his rookie year because he's such an exceptional route runner. And there are some traits that are really elite plus traits that I understand why they would have been intrigued in the middle of the first round. That said, my expectations now lowered pretty considerably just because he's not open enough. I thought he, especially playing in the slot and running some of the stuff that he does underneath, he would just constantly be open and getting yards after the catch. And that just didn't happen frequently enough. He's also known for having exceptional hands, and he dropped too many passes, handful of them overall. But still, it felt like in big spots way too often he would drop passes last year. But if the expectations are lowered to basically 60 for 700, Danny, Where are you at on those two numbers?
Under, and a few reasons why. I echo everything that you said. I'm also a little bit lower on him even than you are. I think he's kind of a tweener. Not an outside guy, not really an inside guy, and they got somebody else like that here, and Luke McCaffrey to come in, presumably into that sort of hybrid role. The targets. He got 13% of the targets last year. I don't see that number changing all that dramatically much with their new weapons, with Austin Eckler, who's going to have an increased target share over guys like Antonio Gibson or Brian Robinson out of the backfield. Zach Ertz is going to take targets. Ben Sinnott's going to take targets. McCaffrey's going to take targets. I think you'll see just as many, if not more, go to Terry McLaurin than last year. And I don't think he's going to be running deep enough. I don't think he's going to be running, kind of those more intermediate routes. I don't think that's where he's stands out, quite frankly, to get separation. I don't see the production going up that high. I do think he has maybe more than last year, but nowhere near enough to justify the draft slot or otherwise. He'll be there kind of 2.5 or 3.5, however you want to put it, in terms of wide receiver options. But I just don't see a huge productivity boom there.
I think that's certainly the most likely outcome. I'm going to take the overs and kind of take one more shot rolling the dice on Dotson here. I actually think his 13% will go up some. Maybe not a ton. But if you're talking about usage in the offense, there's not proven depth that you've got to involve. Right now, McCaffrey's not running with the starters necessarily. It's not like Alameda Zacchaeus or even like Jamison Crowder has flashed the second most of their wide receivers to this point, perhaps. Like those guys may or may not ever really figure into the plan. So there's going to be footballs to go around, I think.
So what number I wanted to add, I apologize, I didn't do it my little soliloquy there. They led the league in pass attempts last year. I don't expect that this year. I don't think they're going to be 640 times dropping back.
Sure.
That's not good for anybody. So that 13% target share is going to be less of a bigger pie.
I agree with that.
Wanted to offer that, yeah.
Although I will say that I think they're going to run more plays because they'll be better on offense. Like total overall
plays. Give and take
there,
sure.
And so maybe you don't have as many pass attempts per se, but you run more plays and you're more efficient. And there were also, you know this, drives and even games where he just was not involved at all. Like 13% even surprises me a little bit because it seems like they would not include him. And I think they're going to include him far more often with a more competent person in running this offense. Let's go to Elia in D.C. on Elijah, I guess. I read that weird. Elijah, what's up? You're on G&D.
What's going on, fellas? What a great question. It was like right on the line for me. But I'm going to take the over, one, because Jaden Daniels, schematically, what a defense is going to have to do, you have a running quarterback who, A, has his skill set, and B, hinting at not running, going up with a no huddle, you know, an up-tempo offense. Schematically, I think Dotson is going to benefit from defenses not being able to account for him and him being able to kind of freely move around the board, almost how Hunter was able to do in Oakland for a bit. I just think if pre-snap, if he's able to get up to speed and the team can drift, they say, oh, he's going this way, and then it's boom. Then he's
You're talking about
another
like
way.
Scramble drill stuff. We actually have him talking about that.
Thank
here,
you, Bruce.
I believe. You know, the idea that Jaden Daniels can extend the play and how that could affect him as a wide receiver. I think that could be a big part of his performance this year and that of Terry McLaurin as well. This is cut four on Jahan Dotson.
Get open. Find a way because he can buy a lot of time with his legs, whether that's running, picking up a block, or creating the second play through the air. I know he can buy time because he has the talent to do so, and he has the arm capability to make any throw on the field. So just try to find a way to get open, using all that energy to create that second play and get open so I can make a big play for the team.
Smart observation by Elijah. Nate's in D.C. on Grant and Danny. What's up, Nate?
Hey, how's it going today?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, so I was just going to touch on a couple points. I'm going to go with the over also for Dotson. One of the main reasons is because we're running the air raid offense under Cliff Kingsbury. Another one that we also are maybe overlooking is if Dan Quinn has any bit of success, Dan Quinn and Joe Witt, defensively, they'll be giving the quarterback more chances to get the ball downfield. And if we look at Cliff Kingsbury's offense in just 3 years ago in Arizona, you can see that Christian Kirk was their leading receiver. He just finished under 1,000. But his next follow-up receiver was A.J. Green with 848, and the following two had just under 600.
They spread it around a little more. That's a good point.
Smart call, buddy.
I mean, those receivers were pretty good, too, including A.J. Green, who was a Hall of Fame-type talent. But your point's well taken. They played point guard at quarterback, and they divvied it up. I mean, it wasn't like there was one predominant figure, as has been the case with McLaurin here very recently. Good thoughts on that for sure. We'll get back into Jahan Dotson later in the show. Remember, Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline on what the Nats got back for Lane Thomas, what they might be able to get for Kyle Finnegan at the deadline today, which is set for 6 o'clock. Steve Weiss of NFL Network, Robert Mays of The Athletic have both been out at Commanders training camp. They're on at 5 and 6 respectively. But speaking of camps, next, let's play a little in or out with some of the main storylines coming out of NFL camps right here on Grant and Danny.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Busy roads, big trucks, bigger risks. Don't face it alone. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
You know, the first thing I think of with him is, like, really good ball skills. So, like, backhand, behind, you know, like if it's in the catching radius, it's a pretty good shot that he's going to come away with it. I thought he's got, and he's also a good route runner. So to set somebody up, to work a leverage and work back. So he's pretty savvy in that way. And so being around Bobby and having an understanding of, you know, what it takes to play it, I've been pleased. And so when we get the ball in his hands, we're going to try to make plays and finish. And that's been one of the emphasis for a lot of the players after the catch, you know, what takes place. And I'm hopeful that you see that at practice, where guys are down the field finishing with them to say, hey, can we extend plays? And so that's one of the big emphases for him as well.
Head coach Dan Quinn at training camp today. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Jahan Dotson spoke, has us thinking about the third-year wide receiver from Penn State. You're going over or under 59.5 grabs and 699.5 yards for Dotson. I was big wrong, loud wrong on Dotson last year. Thought he could lead the team in catches, catch 70-plus balls, go for 1,000. So I'm reassessing. I no longer view him as a guy with the ceiling to be better than McLaurin, which is kind of what I was thinking at one point late in his rookie year, because he's such an exceptional route runner. And there are some traits that are really elite plus traits that I understand why they would have been intrigued in the middle of the first round. That said, my expectations now lowered pretty considerably just because he's not open enough. I thought he, especially playing in the slot and running some of the stuff that he does underneath, he would just constantly be open and getting yards after the catch. And that just didn't happen frequently enough. He's also known for having exceptional hands, and he dropped too many passes, handful of them overall. But still, it felt like in big spots, way too often, he would drop passes last year. But if the expectations are lowered to basically 60 for 700, Danny, where are you at on those two numbers?
Under, and a few reasons why. I echo everything that you said. I'm also a little bit lower on him even than you are. I think he's kind of a tweener. Not an outside guy, not really an inside guy. And they got somebody else like that here, and Luke McCaffrey to come in, presumably into that sort of hybrid role. The targets. He got 13% of the targets last year. I don't see that number changing all that dramatically much with their new weapons, with Austin Eckler, who's going to have an increased target share over guys like Antonio Gibson or Brian Robinson out of the backfield. Zach Ertz is going to take targets. Ben Sinnott's going to take targets. McCaffrey's going to take targets. I think you'll see just as many, if not more, go to Terry McLaurin than last year. And I don't think he's going to be running deep enough. I don't think he's going to be running, you know, kind of those more intermediate routes. I don't think that's where he's stands out, quite frankly, to get separation. I don't see the production going up that high. I do think he has maybe more than last year, but nowhere near enough to justify the draft slot or otherwise. He'll be there kind of 2.5 or 3.5, however you want to put it, in terms of wide receiver options. But I just don't see a huge productivity boom there.
I think that's certainly the most likely outcome. I'm going to take the overs and kind of take one more shot rolling the dice on Dotson here. I actually think his 13% will go up some. Maybe not a ton. But if you're talking about usage in the offense, there's not proven depth that you've got to involve. Right now, McCaffrey's not running with the starters necessarily. It's not like Alameda Zacchaeus or even like Jamison Crowder has flashed the second most of their wide receivers to this point, perhaps. Like those guys may or may not ever really figure into the plan. So there's going to be footballs to go around, I think.
So what number I wanted to add, I apologize, I didn't do it my little soliloquy there. They led the league in pass attempts last year. I don't expect that this year. I don't think they're going to be 640 times dropping back.
Sure.
That's not good for anybody. So that 13% target share is going to be less of a bigger pie.
I agree with that.
To offer that, yeah.
Although I will say that I think they're going to run more plays because they'll be better on offense. Like total overall
take
plays.
There, sure.
And so maybe you don't have as many pass attempts per se, but you run more plays and you're more efficient. And there were also, you know this, drives and even games where he just was not involved at all. Like 13% even surprises me a little bit because it seems like they would not include him. And I think they're going to include him far more often with a more competent person in running this offense. Let's go to Elia in D.C. on Elijah, I guess. I read that weird. Elijah, what's up? You're on G&D.
What's going on, fellas? What a great question. It was like right on the line for me. But I'm going to take the over, one, because Jaden Daniels, schematically, what a defense is going to have to do, you have a running quarterback who, A, has his skill set, and B, hinting at not running, going up with a no huddle, you know, an up-tempo offense. Schematically, I think Dotson is going to benefit from defenses not being able to account for him and him being able to kind of freely move around the board, almost how Hunter was able to do in Oakland for a bit. I just think if pre-snap, if he's able to get up to speed and the team can drift, they say, oh, he's going this way, and then it's boom. Then he's
You're talking about
another
like
way.
Scramble drill stuff. We actually have him talking about that.
Thank
here,
you, buddy.
I believe. You know, the idea that Jaden Daniels can extend the play and how that could affect him as a wide receiver. I think that could be a big part of his performance this year and that of Terry McLaurin as well. This is cut four on Jahan Dotson.
Get open. Find a way because he can buy a lot of time with his legs, whether that's running, picking up a block, or creating the second play through the air. I know he can buy time because he has the talent to do so, and he has the arm capability to make any throw on the field. So just try to find a way to get open, using all that energy to create that second play and get open so I can make a big play for the team.
Smart observation by Elijah. Nate's in D.C. on Grant and Danny. What's up, Nate?
Hey, how's it going today?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, so I was just going to touch on a couple points. I'm going to go with the over also for Dotson. One of the main reasons is because we're running the air raid offense under Cliff Kingsbury. Another one that we also are maybe overlooking is if Dan Quinn has any bit of success, Dan Quinn and Joe Witt, defensively, they'll be giving the quarterback more chances to get the ball downfield. And if we look at Cliff Kingsbury's offense in just 3 years ago in Arizona, you can see that Christian Kirk was their leading receiver. He just finished under 1,000, but his next follow-up receiver was A.J. Green with 848, and the following two had just under 600.
They spread it around a little more. That's a good
point. Smart call, buddy.
I mean, those receivers were pretty good, too, including A.J. Green, who was a Hall of Fame-type talent. But your point's well taken. They played point guard at quarterback, and they divvied it up. I mean, it wasn't like there was one predominant figure, as has been the case with McLaurin here very recently. Good thoughts on that, for sure. We'll get back into Jahan Dotson later in the show. Remember, Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline on what the Nats got back for Lane Thomas, what they might be able to get for Kyle Finnegan at the deadline today, which is set for 6 o'clock. Steve Weiss of NFL Network, Robert Mays of The Athletic have both been out at Commanders training camp. They're on at 5 and 6, respectively. But speaking of camps, next, let's play a little in or out with some of the main storylines coming out of NFL camps right here on Grant and Danny.
Downy Rinse and Refresh. Break up with stinky clothes.
Rinse it out.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of the stinks that just will never come out.
Oh, Downy in the rinse straight.
Every now and then I rinse it out. One wash and it delivers. One wash, it smells so clean.
Downy Rinse and Refresh, it's a dream.
Downy Rinse and Refresh removes 100% of odor in just one wash. Guaranteed.